We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
James Hamm here with us, Talk Kings Basketball. Let's get Ramsey real quick, though. 916-909-1320. Ramsey, what's going on, baby?
Not too much. Just wanted to talk real quick about the other major event we got going on this weekend.
The speaker series with Chris Webber? Oh, okay. Yeah. The Masters.
Glad Tiger Woods made the cut at the Masters. And, I mean, he's eight shots back, but he's still in contention. But he's one over par for 2 days. I mean, had a rough stretch going back out with 23 holes today, which I figured he was going to struggle in the morning. But he warmed up, shot an even par today.
What happened? Did it get dark last night? What happened?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they had 2.5 hours of rain to start the day yesterday, so everyone got started 2.5 hours late. So he only was able to play 13 holes yesterday, played 23 today, and I mean scratch out of even par.
Yeah, it's good
so
stuff.
Was it a rain delay that cost you the belt this morning, Ramsey?
Oh, talking that talk.
Just saying. I don't know. I don't know what happened.
I do have one quick thing. Can we make it a third pocket watching today with Tiger Woods' career?
No. Well, no, that's a lot. No, we're not doing
it today. Casey can play ham if he wants.
We're not bastardizing pocket watching. And two in a day. I don't even know how I would find Tiger Woods' career.
Now that one gets crazy.
That would be, that would be fun, though.
$1.3 billion there.
Man, yes. You know what? You might be pretty damn close.
Well, I mean, that would be overall earnings.
Oh yeah,
that's not just
this
golf.
This would be something.
Is this when I have a
we're
fun?
Not doing it. We're not.
You just want to have a little fun. Just a little fun. There ain't nothing on the line. I'm already cooking.
What are we
doing?
What are we just a pocket watching show now? Is that all we do now? We're just a little gimmick here.
Like I said, Casey can play hammer. We got things going on over here.
Well, look, hey. What makes me so funny? Like, what are you talking about? How am I so funny to you? Like, what is it? The way I talk? What are you talking about? How am I so funny?
No, I was just saying.
I'm funny to you? Am I a joke to you?
No, I was just saying. No, you know.
Look at it. I got it.
You know what's funny about that? You ain't even seen that movie before. You only know that scene.
That scene cracks me up.
Anyone want to take a stab at Tiger Woods' career earnings from golf?
Mm. So that's just like winning tournaments, right?
Yes.
I'll say $75 million.
No. I'm going to say $375.
You guys are ass. There's no point in even. This is why you don't bastardize the game. Well, there's a little math involved. The way it's broken down. By the way, these are all estimated career earnings from Spotrac. They have him at 120.9 million on official tournaments.
Say, look, I'm not that bad. Everybody's 35 million.
Then they have 13 million from unofficial tournaments.
What?
That's 140.
23 million from the Player Index Program.
163.
And it has him at about 157.4 million in tournament winnings.
Mm. What's an unofficial tournament?
So what's his total?
157.4.
Okay. I mean, he's
the official tournaments
over
with the unofficial tournaments in the play. Well, yeah, but that's like, I think he's clocked at like 700 million from Nike.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a lie. I don't think that's true. I think he's well over $1 billion from Nike, or maybe not well over. I think he's in the $1 billion range from Nike.
You talking about what was his? It was Buick was the other one, and he got a couple.
Yeah. He was. I mean, endorsements on golf. Oh my God.
So
it's crazy.
You know Birdie, right? Mike Bird, who runs the Kings broadcast.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe you mentioned him before.
Yeah, he.
I don't know how well I know him, but
he was in the truck running the golf tournament and had a cameraman on the ball when Tiger hit the a chip?
U.S. Open shot.
Yeah,
and where the Nike stop.
And he was ready to go somewhere else, and the cameraman goes, "Hang on, wait just one sec. I want to see what happens." And they get the Nike shot.
Oh, that's tremendous.
Yeah.
It's one of the great. That's one of the greatest moments in golf history.
That was.
Yeah, because they were panning away because they thought it was coming up short. Yeah.
That's one of the great moments ever.
Yeah, the Nike swoosh just as it falls in the hole.
It'll be a far more interesting weekend at the Masters with Tiger involved, at least for me. I know some people don't care, but obviously we have business to attend to with Chris Webber tomorrow at the Gale Theater. Tickets available at eventbrite.com. Search Chris Webber. But I'll be paying attention.
I mean, when
we're having our potato salad and cornbread over at Fixin's, I'll be looking to see what's going on with Tiger.
They'll really get me locked in if he's in some real type of contention on Sunday.
Yeah. For sure.
So that's when I'll be like, oh, okay, let me see what time it is. Let me see what's going on.
Well, of course, we'll be at a hopefully very, very loud Golden One Center.
Hopefully.
On Sunday. Hammer, did the crowd ever really truly get in last night's game?
Yeah. There was a moment where it got quiet, but there was also, first of all, they started booing in the first half. And you know what? For me, I'm perfectly fine. Like, people want to boo. I get some people don't like that on the home court. But I also, it got crazy loud, especially when, even in the fourth, when it was pretty much over, but Keegan started hitting the threes and stuff. And I kind of feel like maybe that's why Mike Brown did that, why he left his players on the court, even though the game was pretty much over and you knew you had a back-to-back. I think what he wanted to avoid was his players getting booed off the court in the final 3-4 minutes of a game, knowing that they had a game tonight and knowing that he wanted some momentum going into the game. And maybe he found it. Maybe Keegan Murray can carry over the 5 3-pointers in the last like 14 minutes of the game. Maybe that's something that you can, like, again, getting the crowd to not leave with such a horrible taste and the players not to sense the crowd feeling that way. Like, I just don't think anyone needed the negativity and coming out of it. You know, you felt bad enough losing the game. You didn't need all of that extra. And I kind of feel
didn't need the chicken wings at center court.
Oh, yeah, the chicken wing. See, I didn't even get to see what or hear Kevin Harlan, because I saw that the chicken wing land and I saw them guy run out with a towel and swoop it up. Mm-hmm. But I didn't actually see. And the Moak, like, just a reminder, please don't throw things on the court.
I believe Kevin said someone threw a chicken wing on the floor. Who would throw a chicken wing on the floor? It's delicious. It's crispy. It's warm. Who would throw a chicken wing? I think that was Kevin's lighthearted moment.
At that point, I was disgusted.
Yeah, I was not in the mood to laugh.
I didn't even see him there last night. I'm bummed out because I love Kevin Harlan. Like, he's my favorite to listen to, and I didn't see him. So I thought it was strange that I like we weren't in the same like realm with the TNT crew, and I don't remember them being in like Mike's press conference. So yeah, it was just that's normally I see who's going to be there. Like a couple of nights earlier was Mike Fratello, like we saw him there, the czar.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't see Kevin Harlan.
Did you get a sense last night that, and talking to Mike and some of the things that you just said he possibly could have done towards the end of that game, that he is as a coach is trying to will this team to like two more victories. Like he is looking at, and I respect it and I love it. I love that attention to detail that he's paying, but he's like trying to think of every little thing he could do to get this team that's undermanned right now, regardless of people want to admit it or say, oh, they've been inconsistent all year, so it wouldn't have been no different. No, they're undermanned right now. Get them across the finish line, hopefully, in a 7-8 game.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mike's general takeaway from like post-game last night is, like, look, they're disappointed. But they understand how important it is that they're in this situation, that they're fighting through this situation, that they're learning from this situation. And I know a lot of people are like, what do they have to learn? It's like, they have all kinds of things to learn, all kinds of things. I mean, we're watching Colby Jones go out there, and one game he tries his best, and it looks great. Another game he tries his best, and it's like, oh, no, what just happened? You got Keon Ellis out there who one night shoots 15 threes, the next night shoots like three or four shots. Like they're learning on the fly. We're watching young players who should not be in that situation at all. Like Keon Ellis was a two-way player until February. Mm-hmm. Like he shouldn't be the starting shooting guard on this team. And at the end of the day, like, look, you accepted the, like, this is the job and you got to go out there and play your best and you got to, you know, try to make a difference and all that stuff. But there's also a certain amount of you just don't know what you don't know. And he's trying to figure it out, and they're all trying to figure out on the fly. I think it speaks volumes when we go through the first half, and again, you see Colby, who, you know, God bless his heart, like he didn't mean to have the 3-minute stretch that he did, but it was like it just was a train wreck. And so, but Mike, he had to go to Chris Duarte in the second half. And, you know, one game he's using Kessler Edwards here and there, another game he's using Sasha. Like, he hasn't stopped coaching. They're trying to find the solution. And, again, it's really tough when one night, you know, even a guy like Trey Lyles, who's still coming back from injury. I mean, people mm-hmm. need to know that. Like, when Trey Lyles is extremely effective and then two nights later he's just not the same. And they're out there grinding, doing the best they can. But, you know, there are reasons why this team is failing, and there are reasons why they've had this problem all year long. And, you know, those aren't the same reasons why they're failing right now. And it's partially because of the reasons that have been going on all season long, that just the roster isn't quite good enough and the roster doesn't have quite the versatility that you want. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that this group isn't fighting tooth and nail. I mean, they're 45 wins. You know, I made this point on the Insiders earlier with Jesse. Like, people need to remember that the 1998-99 Kings went like 27 and 24 or something, or 27 and 25 in the lockout shortened year. The second year of the Kings with Vlade and Peja and Chris Webber and Jason Williams and John Berry and all those, Scott Pollard, all those guys, they won 44 wins. They had 44 wins, and they lost 2-3 in the first round of the playoffs in the second year. And this current team right now in a crazy Western Conference, they have 45 wins with two games left. So there's no shame in what's happening with the Kings. They hit some adversity. They're trying to fight through it. They've got injuries that maybe you cannot get past. You know, maybe you can't. And that's the situation they're in.
Well, it feels like all of the issues that they've had this season are just kind of manifesting themselves again right now. We talk about three-point defense or missed free throws or the offense sputtering. Like, we've seen that over the course of the last 5 days. We saw the offense play well last night, but we saw them give up 50, I think it was 50-something percent against the three. I don't think it's as simple as – well, Malik's out, everything's falling apart.
No.
But Malik is out, and I do think it changes some things that team's game plan. Like, I think Frank Vogel and his staff will game plan differently for the Sacramento Kings, knowing Malik Monk is not going to step on the floor. I think it changes the way they guard Domantas Sabonis, and I think I think to a certain degree it changes the way they guard De'Aaron Fox, because they know De'Aaron is the only one who can get to the rim and create something.
Yeah,
and I mean, Davion can, but Yusuf Nurkic is going to be right there to, you know, hit the ball over to Linnea. Linnea and Jason, shout out.
I think it's like, if we're going to sit here, like, we're not making excuses for this team. I keep telling people, like, when we're talking about this stuff, I don't feel like we're making excuses for them.
Mm-hmm.
What we're explaining is that there is a reason why Domantas Sabonis is taking fewer shots and why he's getting fewer wide open looks at the rim. Mm-hmm. And it's because Malik Monk is the best pick and roll guard in the NBA. Like, that's what the advanced numbers say. He is the best pick and roll guard in the NBA. He hits a pocket pass as well as anybody. It's one of the reasons why they went after him. And it's, in all honesty, it's the reason why they went after JaVale McGee. Because JaVale McGee is the best lob finisher in the pick and roll in the game. And so, I mean, and I'm not just saying that because JaVale. I mean, it's literally, that's what the stats say.
Right.
So when you take away some of these elements, like, that's a reason, it's not an excuse. The Kings don't have a secondary guy like Malik to go out and do the things that Malik does. And Keon Ellis is not that player. He's not. And he probably won't ever be that player, and that's okay. But I think we were talking about it earlier. We always focus on the fact that the Kings are missing 25 points a night. They're missing 7.7 assists per night, too, from Herter and Monk being gone. And it is that secondary playmaker. And people discredit the fact that Kevin Herter's great in the two-man game, too. Mm-hmm. How many times this season did he score, or did he set up Domas in the two-man game? Mm-hmm. Very effective pick-and-roll player. You don't have that with these other young guys. And it's not a knock on Davian. It's just not the style of play. And it's even, that's why they've tried to go to Colby Jones, because Colby Jones has that. I mean, realistically, you know what the next step is? Really, what Mike... He won't do it, but almost like the next step, and I don't even think it's possible, it's Jordan Ford. Jordan Ford is the other pick and roll guy that you have, the other guy that can work in a two-man game, get to the basket and find the guy and make a great pass. Now, you're going to have the problem that no one's going to defend Jordan Ford. Well, he's just going to get a layup every time then. Jordan Ford, number one, is hurt. Number two, like, you're going to use him two games, and then he can't play anymore because he's a two-way contract, and he hasn't played at the NBA level all season long, pretty much. But that's the problem that you have. If you had anybody else that could, that this is who they naturally are, I think you would be okay. But they don't. And again, you can't bank on Monk and Herter going down for the season. And you know, it doesn't matter what depth you have. Most teams in the league can't get past one position losing two primary guys, both of which have high-level passing skills and scoring, shooting, whatever skills. And, you know, maybe it was a different position. Again, Keon Ellis can keep bombing away from three, and that's great. He's just, it's a different style of player that they need right now. They still need Keon, mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're going to have Domas get all these easy buckets at the rim, you got to have somebody who can run the pick and roll. And that's why Mike really...
That player's not on the roster right now.
He's not. Well, the only guy you have is Fox.
Right.
And they just don't run the two-man game with him all that much. And for my money, that's what I want to see the next two games. Just run the two-man game with those two. I know you want Fox scoring all these points.
Does it eliminate Fox's ability to get downhill when they do that?
No, because I think Fox has talked about this before, that the fact that they're both left-handed mm-hmm. makes things extremely difficult to defend. Because if you get Domantas down in the block, a team has to make a decision between allowing Fox to go inside or outside or Sabonis to go outside. So if Sabonis is down in the block, Fox's dominant left hand wants to go around the screen. But if Fox cuts back to the middle with his right, which he can do, it leaves the other side open for Sabonis to take the ball and go to his dominant hand with the left. And they just haven't been able to do it all that much. And that's your primary scorer. Like, you don't want to take the ball out of Fox's hands all the time. You want him to be creative, but at a certain point, man, I need to see it.
One of the things that I think about, like, you talked to Fox about it. He's talked about it more. They know better than I do. But I feel like that Fox, Domas, pick and roll, because they're both left-handed, is circumstantial, right? Because it's at a certain place on the court where that's most effective. It's usually that, if we're looking at the court on the right wing, is where it's most effective. If you notice where they do a lot of the pick and rolls with Monk and Sabonis, it's at the top of the key or coming off that left wing, and it works perfect because you got Malik going downhill on his dominant hand to finish with the right. But if he dumps it off, he gets that pocket pass to Sabonis where he can get it, finish with his dominant hand on the left. When you have Fox and Sabonis, somebody's going to be off their dominant hand. You know what I mean? Because they're both left-handed. So if you've got Fox going, using the screen, going to his left, if he makes the pocket pass, it's going to be Sabonis gathering, finishing with his offhand, his right. If you get it the other way, Fox is going downhill with the ball in his right hand, and he passes. You know what I mean? So it's just my guess. These guys are great players. They could figure it out anyway, but it's my guess. It's not as natural as it's like a dual threat with both of these guys being in their best position to score as when Monk and Sabonis are running that pick and roll.
No, I think you're right. But there are variants off of that. You know, like, again, if Sabonis sets up either at the free throw line or even gets like two steps down and he's closer to the basket, and it's Fox who's feeding him right there, there's like so many elements that you can play off of that. And to be honest, like, I think one of the things that we saw like reappear magically out of nowhere was when the opposition starts closing in on Sabonis, Sabonis started finding Harrison Barnes underneath the basket for wide open looks. It's something we saw last year. You guys remember the game where they ran the same play like seven consecutive times, and it was just like right over the top to Harrison Barnes for a layup. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, wow, look at, well, it's like they pulled it out again out of the playbook. Hey, we forgot about this one. And there it is. You're like, where has that been? And for that matter, like Harrison Barnes, we might need to see more of the two-man game with Harrison. Harrison in the past has averaged three and a half assists a game at like this height. The one year where all they had was De'Aaron, Buddy, and Harrison, where Buddy and Harrison both were like pushing four assists per game like the whole time. So it's possible that Harrison's that guy, but he had played so poorly over the previous four or five games that I don't think anyone thought anything was going to happen with him. And all of a sudden he pops up and just has like a throwback game where I thought he was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we have to see that tonight, and you got to see it on Sunday, and then you got to see it whoever you're playing next week. You got to see it again a couple of times, and then who knows, you know, if they make the playoffs or not. If they do, it's got to be that Harrison Barnes that we saw last night again and again and again.
Where do you think they're at? I know De'Aaron said last night they don't have their head down. They know the task at hand. Do you believe him?
Yeah, I mean, because it wasn't just like we know the task at hand. It was like he was honest about, like, we don't want to be the team at the bottom that has to win two games mm-hmm. to get in. Mm-hmm. We want to be a team at the top that you have to win one out of two to get in.
Yeah,
and you want to win the first one, but you need to win one out of two to get in, and that's it. If you're at the bottom, you have to win two to get in. And so, yeah, I think that he understands, like, where they're at. And even Keegan said the same thing. Like, I think it was Jason Anderson asked about Keegan, like, if they kind of, if they're watching the same, they know where they're at, they're having these discussions. And he's like, yes, we know exactly where we are. We know exactly where we are in the standings, and we know what's at stake, and we're hoping that, you know, we can come through and have a big night. Like, that's, like, they all know. So, and look, they're frustrated. Like, we talked about this before. There was these 2 8-game stretches. There was the first 8 games, and I kept saying, you got to go 8-0 or 7-1 or worst case 6-2, and they don't. They go 5-3. And then there's the second 8, and there were only 2 games in that second 8 that you just, like, circled and said, okay, that's a win. Brooklyn and the Blazers. We're at the point where it's very possible they're going to go 2-6 in that stretch, and it will be Brooklyn and the Blazers that they beat. And that's because, like, man, the schedule's tough. Like, back-to-back New York and Boston, a back-to-back Pelicans and Phoenix, a 3,000-mile road trip in this 2 weeks left in the season. Like, what in the world was the NBA trying to do here? And everyone's facing it, right? Everyone's got a tough schedule, but that schedule in particular, you know, if you get the one injury, and you're more prone to have injuries. I would even look, you know, we had the 5 games in 7 nights that they had. Like, are the injuries right there with the 5 games in 7 nights? I think they are. Like, that's when Malik gets hurt. That's when Kevin gets hurt. It's right around the stretch where you're exhausted. And that's when bad things happen. So
stay away from flopping ass Luka and just tumbling all on your knee.
Oh, I think Luka flopped there.
Yes.
He didn't have to fall like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And people, when I tweeted that out, they're like, oh, you clearly see 3 fouls. I'm not talking about the foul was fake. Like, you know, somebody got him on his wrist. But the whole falling down, like,
yeah.
Stop, bro. Stop.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Okay. Honestly, just thought he fell. But no, I did. I think because I think he's clumsy.
I think he's a world class athlete.
He's absolutely a world class athlete.
Because he's always falling like that. He is a. There's if I can stay on my feet, he can stay on his feet. There was not enough contact for him.
But I don't think it was the contact. I think I'm not trying to like cap for Luka here. Like I don't think it was the contact. I think it was just the step. I think that's all it was. But it doesn't matter. He hurt Malik, so to hell with him. It was his one final FU to Sacramento.
Okay, so
to hell with Luka Doncic.
Just so, what game did – who fouled Kevin Herter and hurt him?
Desmond
Bane. Oh, that was Desmond Bane. That's right at the beginning. So the Kings played March 20th and 21st. They flew from Washington to Orlando and played on the 23rd. They flew from Orlando back home and then played – Philadelphia and Dallas. The next game is when Malik hurts himself. Again, like it's a 5-game in 7-night stretch. He gets hurt right afterwards. Like again, the exhaustion of these players are at
no,
the
he
end.
He didn't hurt himself.
Well,
Malik Luka dropped the people's elbow on him.
He did. He did drop the people's elbow. Yeah, whether it was accidental or not.
Figure four.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is Gilbert asked a good question that we haven't talked about. Did y'all see Charles take a bump last night?
I did. That was pretty good.
Charles took a bump. James, you didn't see
it. I
this.
Didn't see it.
It was they were showing Zion. Zion goes down, and as he's falling, he puts his hands down, and Charles is like, "You can't. You're too big. You have to fall on your butt. Like you can't put your hands down to protect yourself. They used to teach us how to fall." And Shaq goes, no, they didn't. They did not teach you how to fall. And he goes, yes, they did. And Shaq said, go fall. So Charles gets up. He walks around. And he does it in slow motion, but he takes a bump to his ass with no hands. Like, he goes down, and he turns, and he takes a bump to his butt.
This is how you're supposed to fall.
And Kenny tried to do it twice and couldn't do it. He kept stopping himself with his hands.
You don't want the snowboarder injury. That's what that is, the reaching back and – snapping your wrists, like hitting the ground the wrong way.
I always felt that was easier said than done.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's instinctual. It's instinctual to put your hands down. Charles moved very slow in his on his way to the ground. He took a very controlled bump, like when Kane chokeslammed Linda McMahon. It was very controlled. That's what Charles did last night.
Yeah, they teach you to land on your butt, but also to keep your neck up so you don't bounce your head off.
So, and that's what Shaq said.
Well, I don't care about my head.
And that's what Charles said. I don't care about your head. Like, okay, Charles.
Chuck, fall on that big old ass. Chuck.
The best part, my favorite part, was Kenny trying to do it.
I miss Kenny trying to do it.
Kenny tried to do it twice. And both times, Ernie was like, you put your hands down. Kenny couldn't take the bump.
Yeah.
There you go, Chuck. Fall on that big old ass.
Plus, I don't think Chuck really has a neck, so he doesn't have to worry about snapping his head back. And you know, he's not like Roy Hibbert out there like, holy.
And yeah, I think it was Shaq that said that, or Ernie said that. Yeah, fall on your butt, keep your head up. I don't care about my head.
I don't care about my head.
All right, man.
Someone mentioned are we saying Luka did that on purpose? No, we're saying Luka flopped on purpose. Mm-hmm. The fact that he injured Monk was that wasn't intentional.
He wasn't trying to hurt Monk, but his reckless flopping got somebody
hurt. Yes, yes. I totally agree with you. Yeah.
Stay on your feet.
I mean, how many times have I said, like, Chris Paul's got to stop because he's going to hurt somebody? Like, when he flops on a three-point attempt, he flops and then gets sideways and laying there on the ground, and people are tripping over him. And the same with Steph. Steph does the, like, the kick out and then the fall back, and he's like, he looks like he's falling off a cliff backwards, and you're like, hey, bro, you're going to hurt somebody. Like, where is somebody supposed to land while you're sprawling out everybody? Just, like, be natural.
I think you guys are being a little unfair. But he went up for a layup, and he just didn't have his feet underneath them. Like, I don't think he flopped. Okay. I'm not going to do this anymore.
He could have
stayed on his feet.
He could have stayed on his feet.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just a radio tripped. Show host. He's in the air. What I'm saying is he's in the air. He doesn't have his feet underneath him. I don't think he fell on purpose.
Who goes off the ground and doesn't have their feet under him?
Well, that's where, because he runs into Malik. He's running into Malik.
But so look, if Malik's not there, he's just going to fall on his knees?
No, I don't. I think if Malik's not there, he's not falling.
There's a place for him to put his foot down. It's not like he was 7 feet off the ground. He took a little Luka hop. Your feet are right there. You're not even like suspended in air. Your feet are right there. Just take the step.
I think that if that's anyone other than Luka Doncic, no one's saying anything.
Mm. Oh, no, that's not true. They all do it. It's not exclusive to Luka. I will say that. They all do it.
I guess I'm just a clumsy ass because I don't know. It doesn't matter.
You would have stayed on your feet.
Well, I'm a physical specimen. I was just playing into the bit, but obviously. Yeah,
and you're in much better shape than Luka is, let's be honest. Well, there's no question.
I'll trade my shape for Luka's bank account.
Yeah.
We can do that. We can do a little swap here.
That's fine.
All right. What do you think?
About?
Tonight. You think they got one in them? That's been the talking about that for do they have
a two-part question? Do they have one in them?
Oh,
do they
yeah.
have more than one?
Yeah.
In them?
No. Well, I do think that
this
they
just feels
like right now.
Just get ahead of that.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
I got it. Yeah. Settle down. I got it.
Let me do my job. I've had a bad day. Let me have this. Let me have this.
Yo, oh, no. Hey, that was wild, bro.
I just wanted to be clear. We heard it.
It's after 2:30. We heard it. We started to the second grader, man. That's wild. No, that was a wild one. I didn't go lie.
Wow. Oh, Jesse. Back there. Let me have this one.
Jesse was trying to.
To answer the question, yes, I do think they have one in them. I do. I think that, like, I've watched, like, they are fighting. They're trying their best.
Yeah.
And, like, this is a really tough adjustment to get through. I don't think they have the pieces to make it. I mean, you could have reinvented who you were and tried to change some offensive sets and do some things, but there's no time. Look at their schedule over the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks since Malik's been out. Like, there's no time to reinvent who you are and make some massive adjustment to hide the fact that you only have one, like, true playmaker. You don't. And, hey, let's be honest. I know it might have been by design, but OKC, they got 58 three-point attempts, and, like 42 of them were wide open. Mm. Like, they're still creating the shots. They're still getting the shots. What they're not getting is the 60% at the rim shot. And that's the one that realistically you got to figure out.
No, I mean, I'm with you. That's something that I've always looked at, you know, all season. Is even in the slumps and in the bad games, are you still able to generate? Is the offense working the way it's supposed to be? And it seems like it is. It just got to hit it. But
there's just no versatility in the offense, though. So.
No.
He is so fed up with you. He is so sick of you.
My favorite part was the no sell.
Come on. What is happening?
My question to you.
Home stretch, baby. Home stretch to the show.
I feel like you've been
season.
There before, huh?
My question to you, James, though, is do you because I'm hopeful, but I gotta keep it real. I'm not 100% like, yeah, for sure they're gonna do this. Can they get two wins? Now they're gonna need two wins. Like they're gonna, and I'm not counting the Blazers game. I'm talking about, are they gonna be able to win tonight, and then are they gonna be able to win a play-in with this group?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can. I think they can rise to an occasion. I also think that they could really use, I don't know what day the play-in is scheduled for, if it's Wednesday or Thursday.
If they're 7-8, they're going on Tuesday.
Is that quick?
Yeah, if they're 7-8, it's Tuesday. 9-10 is Wednesday, and the final game is on Friday. So if you lose, if you get 7-8 and you lose, you got an extra day. But let's hope you don't lose.
Huh.
Well, okay. Let's hope you're 7 or 8.
There's that too.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, I would have wished that they would have a little bit more time to prep, because they do. I don't know how far out Malik is. Again, the team told us 4 weeks when he got hurt, and we're nowhere near 4 weeks at this point. But like, we had Chris Biederman on earlier this week on the Insiders, and like his conversation with Malik when he was on. He said, look, the dude's working out like crazy. Like, he's trying to get back, like, as quickly as possible. But, and I keep saying this, Malik needs to do what's best for him. Like, he's a free agent. And, like at the end of the day, it's his body. It's his money. It's you know, his family that's going to be long-term set. And if he's not 100%, like, I have a really tough time telling him to go back. Because it's a knee. Mm-hmm. Like, so, I haven't lost all faith in who they are and what they do and whether they can beat somebody, because it's not like Phoenix has just blown anybody away. I mean, this is the same team that was down like 37-10 after one quarter, like two games ago. Yeah. And also they were down like 53-13 or something. It was something ridiculous.
They struggled in the game that they won against the Clippers where nobody played.
Yeah, they almost lost to Bones Highland by himself. So
best player. Well, I think Russ might have played too, but those were like the two best players on the floor.
Yeah.
It was 15-15-15 in that game.
That was a triple double game for us.
Okay. We'll come back. Home stretch here. We'll get you ready for the Kings and the Suns, man. No rest. Right back at it tonight.
Big game tonight, man. Big game.
You can bring the vibes back.
Yeah.
Or not. But you can bring the vibes back with a victory tonight. And then, you know, we'll start worrying about the Trailblazers. Right now, it's all about Phoenix. So we'll talk more about the Sacramento Kings, the playoffs, the play-in, and the Phoenix Suns tonight at the Golden 1 Center. D'Lo and Casey return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Let's hear from Kevin Herter. James mentioned this during the commercial break. I actually haven't had a chance to hear this yet. I know you guys were speaking to him yesterday before the game. So let's hear from our man Kevin Herter.
Yeah, I don't think you should get used to slang, so I would rather not.
Just
what do you overall think kind of goes through your mind having this operation and kind of not being able to be here?
Timing obviously sucks. No other way to put it, but successful operation.
So I hate this sound. So let's just get rid of that. Especially because no, it's not your bad. We just can't hear Sean in the question. So I'd rather just go to you and ask you what were your takeaways from your conversation with Kevin Herter.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Kevin said that he hurt his shoulder originally when he was young, when he was like 11 or 12 playing football. But then he hurt it again a couple of years ago playing for Denver. And since then, he knew he had an issue then, but it wasn't to the point where he had to have surgery. This time around, when he hurt it, I mean, clearly the tear in his labrum like had gotten bigger. And basically they said, look, they had a couple of doctors look at it. They're like, look, you're going to have a repeated issue here. Your shoulder is going to pop out now. And every time your shoulder pops out, not only are you going to have to deal with like how long the recovery is every time, but on top of that, it can start to do other things. So as of right now, like there is no other damage in there. We're going to go in, we're going to, you know, sew this, the tear back up and then, and put some, like they drill a couple of holes and put some pins in to hold the labrum in place inside the shoulder. But he said, like, look, if I had a really bad dislocation, I could chip a bone, I could tear the rotator cuff, I could do other damage in there, and then never be the same. Mm-hmm. He's like, so it came down to, like, at what point do you have to have a surgery? And I kind of get the, like, we asked him pretty point blank, like, did you have to have the surgery? And I think the answer was, well, not today, but it would have had to have happened before he was like 100% comfortable going back out on the court. And so I don't think that what they could have done was like patched him up until he could get to a point where he could play and then go out there and play until the season's over and then have the surgery. Because again, the way that his shoulder is at this point, he was very susceptible to having it pop out again because the tear had gotten bigger. And if that would have happened, there is a very good chance that he would have had potential other damage and longer term damage and even permanent damage that, you know, could have changed like the trajectory of his career.
Jeez.
Man. He felt bad. I mean, he feels bad. Like he wants to be out there with his teammates and like he knows like this is a bad situation. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of like what we talk about with Malik, what I talk about all the time with Malik. Like at some point as a player, you have to, sure, he's under contract for 2 years, but you got to worry about the 6 year or 8 years after that in the mm-hmm. league. Yeah. And you need to do what's best for your body and make sure that you're okay, even if that does like short term hurt the team. And, you know, again, the Kings will make a decision on what Kevin Herter is to this team going forward in the offseason, whether the shoulder was there or not. There was already, you know, like we've kind of got to the point where you have to make a decision on what you're going to do with him. And like this may have like there's no hard feelings or anything there. So this is what like the doctor said was the best like treatment for him. And OK, like that's what we do. Like it's not like he went outside the bubble of the Kings and, you know, they know what the Kings knew who he was going to see. They made phone calls. They helped him get wherever he had to go. And in the end, this was the right answer for him and his career.
Just
what's wrong with that?
Gut feeling. You think he played his last game as a King?
Yeah. I think that's a good chance that he's played his last game. I'll say this, like this offseason, I would be surprised. Now, maybe I'm way off here because maybe there's no way they can do this, but I would be surprised if both he and Harrison were back. Like, not, I mean, one or the other, I think, probably won't be back. And I could see Kevin playing more small forward moving forward. I could see, you know, because I do think that you need to address a couple of positions here. There's no question about that. The Kings have to find a way to get more length and athleticism at the two, the three, the four, all of those positions. And the easiest way to do it is with guys that are considered good NBA players, have a skill set that is marketable and works for other NBA teams, but just might not be the right fit for your team. And, you know, I'll keep going back to, you know, the fact that the Kings traded Jason Williams for Mike Bibby. And I would make the claim all day long that I think Jason Williams was always a better player than Mike Bibby, but he wasn't a better fit for the Kings. And Mike Bibby made the Kings a better team. And that's kind of where I'm at. Like there are going to be positions on this team. The team that made the playoffs the first year and the second year will not be the team that made the third and fourth years. That's never the way it goes in the NBA. Very rarely do you see one team stay the course with one group of players, and it's just those guys. And so that means you've got to make changes at some positions, and it's not going to be a point guard, it's not going to be at center, and it's not going to be at the forward position, whichever one Keegan Murray's playing. It's going to be at the other positions.
I think one thing that we've learned, well, I feel like I've learned this year, and I don't know how the organization feels, is I think Keegan Murray is most dynamic and most impactful being a stretch four. I think he showed a lot of ability to be able to move and do some stuff at the small forward position, and he can go there in a crunch or in certain matchups, or if you want a certain defensive matchup. But especially offensively, I think he's more of a matchup problem being a four with how he can shoot the ball. And I only say that to say they should be, whether it's Kevin or something like that, they should be looking to fill that small forward spot with somebody a little bit more traditional, small forward-like, a little bit more athletic, explosive, or you can go three guard, you know, and do it that way. And I don't know how you want to go, but I think that's one thing that I feel like I learned this year in his second season and seeing growth in him. He's gotten better. He's surprised me with the way he can move and the way he can defend and even handle the ball sometimes. But I still think he'd be best used at the four as a stretch four.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, for me, like, look, what we've seen from him defensively tells me that he can defend twos, threes, fours without any problem. And so for me, when it comes to the modern NBA and offensive versatility, like, the three and the four are almost identical in most situations. And it's who can you defend? And like at this point, I don't think Harrison Barnes can defend. I'm never going to put Harrison Barnes on Steph Curry, which is something the Kings were able to do with Keegan. And I don't even think there are a lot of twos that you can put Harrison Barnes on at this point. And so I kind of feel like that Keegan is still like your wild card. Like, look, in some crazy world where you're able to find two like super athletic 6'8", 6'9", long, crazy 3-and-D threes and fours, I would be comfortable putting Keegan at the two at 6'8". I don't care. I think he can play it. I think he can play just about any position on the floor. I will say, like, hat tip to Harrison Barnes and this against New Orleans, but they shifted Valanciunas. They had Sabonis defend Zion early in the game and Harrison defend Valanciunas, and I thought he did a really good job. Like, he's out there and just got abused by a gigantic, like, 7'1", 280-pound man. But, like, held his own. Like, sat there and fought. So I think the versatility of Keegan still, to me, is, like, the big key to this team, because the fact that he can play the 2-3-4 allows you to go out and attack the roster in a couple of different ways.
Do you think Casey Herter's played his last game as a King?
See, I hear what James is saying a little bit, but I don't think if he's played his last game as a King, I think Harrison Barnes has too, because I think that's the move you make.
They're getting traded together.
Yeah, that's what I think. I don't feel like whatever you would get back for just one of them would be like a major upgrade. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, but remember that you've got Chris Duarte on a $6 million expiring contract. You got Davion Mitchell on a $6 million expiring contract. You had Trey Lyles on an $8 million expiring contract. You got Sasha Vezenkov on a $7 million expiring contract with a team option for the next year. like the
good tray out of your thinking.
Well, the financial like flexibility of this team going into this offseason is pretty cool. Like, because that was what they had the problem with going into like draft night last year after you had Rashawn Holmes' deal. The Kings didn't have anyone else under contract. Like, they couldn't have traded Harrison Barnes. He wasn't under contract. So they had all of this like weirdness, and they've had that a couple of times, but this time you got a bunch of movable pieces. So again, if somebody says, hey, I got a $34 million, $36 million player, you can start doing quick math and you're like, okay, I could take $18 million of Harrison Barnes, add in $6 million of Chris Duarte, add in another $6 million Davion. Next thing you know, I'm at $30 million, and that's within the 25%. So what I think the secondary question is like, will you have your picks? Will you have the draft capital to go out and do something substantial? Because while I think, you know, you could see Kevin and Harrison going somewhere else, even if it is as a package, because that right there is like right away you're at $36 million, and $36 million plus or minus 25%, you can get all the way up to like a $42 million player. And then you still have the Davion or like these other guys that you can throw in, right? So I think that does make sense. But the question is, what is the value of those guys? And if all you have to offer is a possibility of a 27 or a 28, 29, 30, 31 draft pick, but every other year type deal, that's just not a lot of draft capital.
Paul George, sign and trade.
You got to have him want to come here, and you got to have the Lakers want something that you have. Clippers.
Well, the Clippers will lose him. My argument with that all the time would be you're losing him for nothing if you let him walk. You can at least get some players back.
Yeah. I would also, like, one of the problems that you have with sign-and-trades is sign-and-trades hard cap your team, and so they become extremely difficult to do.
They're not as – I think they used to be a lot more regular.
Yeah.
They're not anymore because of that.
It hard caps you.
Don't kill my dreams, bro.
It's because it's a dream. I really do think it's a dream. And I think anytime.
You know who else fits in there? Zach LaVine.
No.
Zach LaVine, if the Kings had Zach LaVine right now, they'd be in a much better spot than what they are. Because
they wouldn't be, because Zach LaVine's not playing right now.
He's not playing. But if he's.
He'd be with Malik. They'd be really well dressed on the sideline, but yes. He'd be with Malik.
If he's healthy and playing, they need another shot creator. Even if they bring Malik Monk back next year, they can't be in this situation again, where if one player goes down, Fox or Monk, heaven forbid both of them, that they just nobody else can get to the bucket, nobody else can create. Like, they need another shot creator in a bad way.
I agree with you, but you don't need a $50 million shot creator. What you can do with that situation is, again, like, not to like single one guy out, but like, if Davion's not that guy, you can back up your point guard position with a guy who's a more natural shot creator for others. Like, that's something you can do. You can find another shooting guard that's a better version of what Chris Duarte was supposed to be. But again, at like the $8 to $10 million range. If the Kings, let's just say, again, they're somehow able to get Malik Monk to come back, right? At the $17.4 million. Mm-hmm. The Kings at that moment, before they do any of these trades that we talk about, these potential, like, what would they do with this or that, they would also still have a $13 million, $12 million mid-level exception. And that can get you a quality rotational player at the NBA level. Like, again, what you did with Malik Monk. You know, there's a possibility there that you could go get that type of player in that situation. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think you can take a big improvement. But at the same time, I don't know that this team's going to pay the luxury tax if they're not guaranteed a really good team. And that would mean you need to clear out some of the other space.
That luxury tax question is an interesting one, because obviously Vivek, Monty, they don't want the team in the luxury tax position. They don't want this team in this position, in the luxury tax position. But where do they have to be? Like, are we talking legitimate title contender? Are we talking Minnesota, Oklahoma City, Denver? Like, they need to be in that range, which right now I think those guys are hovering around 55, 56 wins. Is that the type of team that Monty has to look at? This is a 55-win team. This is a team that can represent the Western Conference. I keep saying, Monty, really, it's Vivek's decision. All right, we'll go into the luxury tax for this group.
Well, I think that that's always a possibility. And look, I know Vivek is not – I mean, the Kings are around 20th, 21, 22 in NBA payroll right now, right? And they have been. They haven't been a luxury tax team the whole time. The key to being a luxury tax team is that when you take that next leap and you have to pay it, but you also have to have vision for what's ahead. So people want them to just go out and spend. You have to understand that De'Aaron Fox's contract is it like 36 or 38 million? Well, there's another contract that's coming that is the Jaylen Brown contract that goes up to like 60 to 70 million. There's a Keegan Murray contract that you got two more years of cheap Keegan, and after that it's astronomical Keegan. And so you have to be a little bit constrained with how you handle this. It's like you just can't go out and do like what the Niners do. They bring in one big name guy after another, and then they rework their contract after a year. That's not how the NBA works. Mm-hmm. So in order to get that that big dollar player, I mean, it's going to be tough. You would need to, like, the next step would be to trade like two or three of these pieces for either one big piece or break it up in a different way. You know, again, I don't know that this team with a $40 million Sabonis, a $30 million Keegan, a $50 million De'Aaron, and, you know, a $20 million Malik, like, the salary cap is going to go up for sure, and the new TV deal will make some of this, like, a moot point. But in the meantime, you can't guarantee that, and you have to be fiscally responsible. And that's, you know, again, whatever it was that Vlade did, good or bad, the one good thing is he always had Ken Catanella by his side doing these crazy two-year deals with third-year option or one-year deal with second-year option. They always had an out clause. They always had a way to make sure that they hadn't, like, put a stranglehold on themselves. And that's, you got to be that way. Yeah, I think the Kings have been fiscally responsible. And it's just how do you build out the team? How do you take the next step without just completely hamstringing yourself? And we see Glenn Taylor is claiming that he's pulling out of the deal with A-Rod and the other owner in Minnesota because he said they submitted a budget to him that had them dropping the Timberwolves payroll to $171 million below the luxury tax. And he said, hey, man, look, we've been waiting forever for this team to win. We finally got a winner. I'm not letting you do that.
Who told him that? Well, he could have got Naz Reid or McDaniels or something.
Yeah,
damn.
See?
Well, I also think it's really interesting that report dropped like...
Yeah.
It dropped at a really interesting time.
I agree.
But
look at Minnesota's salary, and you can kind of look at the Kings' salary and understand where this thing is going and how much trouble they're going to be in because they've got Anthony Edwards about to hit the lottery too. And then what do you do when you've got Gobert and you've got Cat and you've already paid Jalen McDaniels like 20 plus million a year? You got Naz Reid at 16 or 18 million bucks a year. You're starting to look at that and go, okay, like, how are you going to manage this? And what happens with Mike Conley when he goes away? Like, who are you going to have play point guard? Like, it's tough to stay at the top and without paying astronomical, like the $186 million the Golden State Warriors are paying in luxury tax this season.
What are we talking about Monday?
Man, that's such a good question. I mean, seriously. Well, first of all, we're talking about how we're giving away $500 every day.
James.
Amen.
Come on, man.
We're going to give away $500 in monies.
Monies
every
single day.
And dough and cashola.
Yeah.
Oh, can I say that?
That was a little too close.
Yeah. We're gonna talk about that. We're gonna have two more Jiffy Lube Fast Break players of the game to give away.
Very good.
$100 gift certificates
Get your stuff off. Get all your stuff off.
And a jersey.
Yeah.
We're gonna talk about all that. But hey, look, man, I really do hope we're talking about how somebody's got to fill in for James on Tuesday because he's got to fly somewhere to go catch a game.
Oh, man.
And,
I hope not.
I
hope you're going to be right here.
Yeah, that's possible. That's possible.
That's what I'm hoping for. Go T-Wolves? right?
Because
we're only talking about Phoenix.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. So, yeah, Kings got to get one tonight, and then it's go Minnesota. Who, if Minnesota beats Atlanta tonight, I got to imagine that game is going to be for something.
Oh, yeah, that game.
I mean, especially with all of them being at 12:30, like they're not going to know what Oklahoma City did. They're not going to know what Denver did.
Right.
I think Denver, by the way, plays. Denver's Denver. I feel like Denver was one of the teams too that had like a pretty.
You see who the Lakers play tonight?
Tonight?
Yeah.
Who's tonight?
They play Memphis, and Memphis has 13 players out.
Well, they play the Pelicans on Sunday.
Yeah. No, that's going to be a battle royale. Well, maybe not, because the Pelicans may have just secured their spot.
And that would mean that the Warriors kind of got out the way, too, if that happened.
Mm.
Yeah, because the Pelicans play the Warriors tonight. Yeah,
not completely out of the way, but you got them pushed back.
Were we looking at? Denver. Denver was
wild.
Who we were looking at.
They got
Denver.
Utah wild. And...
No, Denver has San Antonio tonight in Memphis.
Oh, my gosh.
Both on the road.
Why is Memphis still in the league at this point?
Hey.
Don't get Portland out of the league. Keep them
in. Hey, Portland's a good basketball team, man. They're just fighting. Oklahoma City closes out with Milwaukee and Dallas. Dallas is kind of chilling.
Yeah. They're still trying to get home court.
Mm.
Trying to get
Clippers.
Home court.
Yeah.
I think we're talking about 7-8 matchup.
Okay. At home or away?
Away.
Away, because they need Phoenix to lose twice to get
Phoenix
home,
has
right?
to lose twice.
Yeah, but Phoenix plays Minnesota on Sunday.
That's the other thing.
You beat them tonight, you got a shot.
Look, I hope you're right.
I'm not gonna get too greedy. I'm gonna say away.
I'm hoping 7-8 too.
I just hope we're talking 7-8.
That's it.
Either way, we'll be talking Kings. We'll be doing it tomorrow with Chris Webber, too, at the Guild Theater. Eventbrite.com. Search Chris Webber. Come through. Use the promo code ESPN1320 to get a discount on your tickets. Still a few $25 tickets available. If you don't want the book, you don't want the meet and the greet, you don't want all that stuff, just come through and hear one of Sacramento's greats, Chris Webber, speak at the Guild Theater with D'Lo and Casey tomorrow. And we will see you here Monday at 10 a.m., beginning with the Insiders. On Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Kings, light the beam.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.